Welcome to the Not Just a Pony Ride podcast, presented to you by Hetra University. If you've landed here, you're probably passionate about how horses help people. This podcast is for anyone who helps others experience the benefits of horses or those who have experienced it themselves. If you're in the equine assisted services industry, we're here to help you. If you're here just to learn more, you're in the right place. Welcome to your community of like-minded people, where you will hear stories, education, science, and explanations about how what we do is so much more than just a pony ride. And now, from the Hetra campus in Gretna, Nebraska, here's your host, occupational therapist and CTRI, Katie Ott.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the last episode of 2023. It's bittersweet. I can't believe that we have completed three seasons of this show. This is episode 69. So 69 episodes of education and advocacy, and I'm just really, really proud of this little podcast. So thanks for sticking around for the ride. If you're new, welcome, and buckle up, because 2024 is going to be an awesome, awesome year. We've already got a lot of things planned and some changes happening too. So stay tuned for all of that. Just as of some friendly reminders, we got a lot going on at Hetra University too. So if you haven't heard about Hetra University Live yet, it's going to be an awesome event, an in-person workshop held right here at Hetra in Gretna, Nebraska, February 15th and 16th of 2024. So we're going to do some hands-on workshop for EAS professionals, and we're also going to do some networking and some other things, which is all happening prior to the PATH International Region 7 conference, which is held that weekend, and we're hosting that as well here in Gretna. So if you want to just pack your brain full of all of the wonderful knowledge that we have to offer, come on out to Gretna. If you can't make it out to Gretna in person, don't worry, because our wonderful program manager, Shelby Schult, is going to do a live webinar for us, and that is happening January 11th. I will put the links to all these things I'm talking about in the show notes, but that webinar is going to take place on Zoom, so you can sign up there. It's just $10, and she's going to present on equine strategic planning. She did that presentation at the PATH International Conference. It was fantastic. It was a packed house. Lots of people really enjoyed her practical advice on how to plan for your herd, both financially and just, you know, sustainably, to have the best working herd that you can. So leaving all that information in the show notes, today I have a wonderful guest, an absolutely beautiful soul. Her name is Steph Farr, and she is going to share with us about why educating yourself about neurodiversity is so important and what exactly all that means. So she is a woman who has an autism diagnosis herself, and she has really taken it upon herself and kind of made a focus for her life to advocate for others who experience neurodiversity and really just create a inclusive atmosphere for everybody. So today she's going to talk to us about, you know, changing the language and flipping our script from more of that deficit-based model to more of a strengths-based perspective, excuse me. Enjoy the episode today, and I'll look forward to seeing you guys in 2024 next time. Thanks for joining me today, Steph.
Hi, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So tell us a little bit about who you are, introduce yourself, and kind of what you do.
Okay. So my name is Steph. I use she, her, they, them pronouns. I'm from Georgia. I am an emerging practitioner in the equine assisted services field. I just received my master's of psychology over the summer, and I'm working towards my equine-assisted mental health and learning certificate from PATH International. I am currently working at a ranch in North Georgia. I work as a neurodiversity consultant and psychological educator for different community avenues, individuals, and equine-assisted yards. So yeah, that's my background.
Very good. So you mentioned that your primary kind of position right now is that you are a neurodiversity consultant, right?
Yes.
Explain to me what that is and what all that entails.
Okay, so a neurodiversity consultant educates and provides services to individuals, families, communities, and stakeholders about neurodiversity. So neurodiversity is a concept that believes there is a natural variation of difference in human functioning. So the neuro part, meaning nerve, kind of points to our nervous system, which points to the functionality of our whole body. So it really is a body-mind variation in human existence. And it's a celebration of difference. And beyond that idea or the concept of difference, it's a movement. It's a movement that was derived from the autism self-advocacy movements in the 90s, from disability movements, and even the human and civil rights movements. So it's not only about accepting difference and celebrating difference, it's also about finding value in different body minds and working as a whole society and culture to accommodate those differences. So really it's about positive space making for people of all abilities.
Yeah, I love that. That's beautiful. I think that bringing awareness to something sometimes people think has a tendency to skew a little bit negative, like you're different, so I have to treat you differently, or, you know, and there's kind of that, like, and I guess I wouldn't say negative, but, you know, that kind of skew towards things. But I like how you mentioned that it's, you know, more of a celebration of awareness and, you know, just bringing that to light in a way that we can just celebrate that everybody's different, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, we get a lot of the negative part already from the deficit-based models that are the status quo when it comes to diagnoses and neurodivergence. So under the neurodivergent umbrella, there exists autism spectrum disorder, ADHD, CPTSD, Tourette syndrome, Down syndrome, even depression and anxiety exist under the neurodivergent umbrella. So it really is a person-centered approach and individualizing and individualistically tailoring our understanding to each individual's person's difference, and creating spaces that are open to multiplicity of existence and multiplicity of truth.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, we should be accepting and open of everybody, all ability levels, especially for us in the therapeutic writing world, right? Because we're serving mm-hmm. participants that do have differences or diagnoses or whatever they are. But why is educating ourselves about neurodiversity and kind of that that whole umbrella of things so important?
So in the equine-assisted services realm, we are serving, the vast majority of people that we're serving exist under this neurodivergent umbrella. I think it's autism is one of the diagnoses or populations that is the largest growing population that we serve. So adopting a framework that is inherently accepting and not only positive, but critical is important to the work that we do with our clients or our writers and our participants. It creates better connection. It creates better services. And kind of an overall community that has a better understanding of the people that we serve.
Mm-hmm. So how do we go about doing that? What are some, you know, do you have some tips on how to, you know, to be very thought forward on all of this?
Sure. I think that recentering our participants, recentering neurodivergent ideas, centering our clients individual needs, I think, is one way to go about it. For example, if we look at autism, which is really at the crux of the neurodiversity movement, it's where it was birthed, was from the autism advocacy, self-advocacy movement. But it is a spectrum, and no one autistic person or person on the spectrum is the same. So for me, I think it's getting to know our participants on an individual level and asking them and asking their family members what it is that they need, what accommodations fit them best. And also sometimes people are still figuring it out. So then being open-minded and brainstorming, you know, how do we provide services and education the way that best fits you as an individual?
Right. So then is that sort of how your job was born then, like going in and helping people discover some of those things? Because I can see, at Hetra, we're blessed to have a team of therapists and then our instructor team as well. So if we ever have opportunity like that where we need to investigate, you know, individuality or figure out something that's working better, we can have, you know, an OT or speech therapist or somebody step in to help kind of bridge that gap. So is your position sort of that bridge where you come in and help facilitate some of that for instructors, or what does that look like for you?
Yeah, my this practice, which again is emerging for me, so I'm still figuring out where I belong and what my place is, what my role is in the equine assisted world. But it was kind of born out of an internship that I did in my graduate work at an equine assisted facility. I got invited to teach about neurodiversity, and I realized the need for more psychological education in the field. And then at the same time, I am still getting to know my own diagnoses as an autistic person, as someone who has PTSD and ADHD. And so that's kind of where the peer support comes into play, and the one-on-one and providing tools and resources to neurodivergent people, along with that community education and providing resources and information to families as well.
Mm-hmm. Are there other folks out there that do what you do?
Absolutely. There's a lot of autistic self-advocates who are practicing similar modalities, either in the art world or the horse world. There is one person who I really love and I follow on Instagram. Their Instagram is Auntie Nell. And they're really great about posting from their autistic perspective and providing different ways of thinking about neurodiversity and autism. One really great example I can give is the use of language. So in the autism realm, as far as the status quo mainstream psychology goes, we really look at autism from a deficit model. So kind of, it's a kind of negative. And a neurodiversity model would practice speaking about autism differently. So your example would be, as a deficit, autism or autistics fail to have normal back and forth conversations. From a neurodiversity perspective or an autistic self-advocate perspective, that would be redefined as, we often prefer social interactions in which one person takes the lead. Another example of a deficit is autistics have strong attachments to or preoccupations with unusual objects. A redefinition of that would be, we may develop bonds with items to represent our special interests or happy days and use these items to self-regulate. So yeah, there's a lot of different people who are out there doing different kinds of neurodiversity work. A lot of them are on the internet. That's kind of the history of neurodiversity and autism self-advocacy. It was born out of the 90s when the internet was becoming a thing, and and chat and text-based communication was a way or a platform for people who are neurodivergent to voice their concerns and their needs.
I love that, sort of flipping the script to things that are more positive. And I think that completely applies to, you know, even if you're looking at physical disabilities, you know, not speaking about neurodivergent specifically as well. You know what I mean? I mean, just getting out of that kind of deficit model. And I think as a therapist, that's sometimes hard for me because that's, we're treating the deficits, right? Like we're trying to help remediate some of that stuff. So how do we spin that in a way that we're going to continue to work on this, even though this is a preferred, you know, their preferred way of interacting or, you know, whatever it is, right?
Right. Yeah. And neurodiversity, it does take in consideration that some of these diagnoses or people who are neurodivergent have do see themselves as valuable, but also they also may perceive themselves as disordered or having a disability, not because they are themselves are disabled, but because society lacks accommodation for difference. So it is kind of a two-part thing, and there is a debate in the community whether, you know, are we taking too much of a positive approach and not utilizing a deficit-based model? Should we use both? And it's the answer is different for different people. So it's a whole culture and a whole community where conversations are open to discussion. And it's really interesting and enlightening for sure.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
This episode is sponsored by Freedom Rider. Freedom Rider's mission is to provide safe, top-quality tack, supplies, and resources for riders, horses, instructors, and trainers. Starting in 1996 as a catalog of hard-to-find specialty items for therapeutic riding and driving, this company has grown to include more items for therapeutic riding, hippotherapy, and able-bodied riders of all disciplines. By working with select manufacturers, specialized craftsmen and women, and actually developing their own products based on customer needs. This store carries everything from hard-to-find adaptive tack solutions, saddles, all different kinds of reins, educational books and curriculums, fun equipment like rings, bean bags, sensory items, and so, so much more. Check out Freedom Rider and all they have to offer at www.freedomrider.com.
So this is a little off topic, but sort of related. So, you know, when we talk about self-advocacy and more of this positive light of things, and I'm sort of thinking about how it relates back to how people with autism will sometimes mask their symptoms, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of that like self-advocacy, how that plays in like just being yourself and being accepted as yourself. Can you talk a little bit about like that masking and kind of that self-advocacy, how that might relate?
Sure. So masking is, for me, it has both negative and positive connotations. It is a tool for people who are on the spectrum to survive in a neurotypical world where, you know, we may not be accepted for the different ways that we behave or move or interact or socialize. So in one way, masking helps us to get by day to day in this world. And in another sense, it is also exhausting to constantly have to learn the neurotypical way of doing things and perform that for our families and our communities. So there is a movement in the autistic or autism realm where we are kind of unmasking ourselves and creating space for ourselves just to be us. Mm-hmm. And whatever that looks like, there are all kinds of like spaces and groups that are inclusive and accepting to different body minds in that way. A big aspect of that is stimming, which is a self-regulating action or behavior that kind of helps us to regulate our dysregulated emotions into the outside world. It, you know, hand flapping or spinning or various other movements might seem like weird or odd, but to us, it really helps kind of regulate. So there is a self-advocacy movement around things like unmasking and stemming acceptance. And yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any suggestions for, and it's always something that I'm trying to be really aware of, is just being kind of a safe place where everybody, all my participants, feel like they can be themselves. Is there a way that you can communicate that to participants? Like if I have a new client that comes in, you know, that is on the autism spectrum, how do I communicate that in a way that's not, you know, cheesy or hokey, you know, that it is a safe place or they don't have to mask? And, you know, how do you create a culture of just that acceptance?
I think just stating it up front and practicing using accepting language. It is a practice, and I don't think anything is necessarily right or wrong, and things are ever changing. So being up front and being open and asking them what they need. Some people might not be ready to unmask. Some autistic people might not even know, you know, how deep their mask goes. And so we don't want to do any harm. So I guess just being open and using inclusive language. Yeah, and just stating your purpose.
Right. What does, you know, some of this inclusive language and this whole neurodivergent movement and acceptance, what does that mean to you as a woman who has some of these diagnoses?
I think it might be in how we ask each other, ourselves, how to interact on a day-to-day basis, if that makes sense. I think one thing that kind of pops up in mind immediately when you ask that question is an experience I had at an equine assisted yard that I was volunteering and sidewalking for, where we were working with a young girl who was on the spectrum, nonverbal, doing really great work, mounted and on the ground. And there was a moment where the practitioners around her thought that they had lost her concentration because she wasn't focused with her eyes on the horse. She was really interested in the sounds of the birds and the trees. And they said, "Oh no, we've lost her." And kind of like talking about somebody when they're there is a big thing in the autism community that we're trying to fix. But also aside from that, people interact and focus differently. So her body was still engaged. She was, you know, still had her hands on the reins. Her legs were engaged. She was focused. She just focuses differently. And I don't know if that answers your question, but I guess it goes to like how we speak to and we speak about and include people who that we work with who may be neurodivergent or have different diagnoses and disorders, disabilities and differences.
I love that. That was a fantastic example of that, because I think so much of the time we see that a lot in schools too, right? Mm-hmm. So just because they're not sitting at a desk in a chair, eyes on the teacher, doesn't mean that they're not listening or
learning. Oh yeah.
You know, so yeah. it those strategies and thought processes completely relate to what we're doing in the arena, because that's, we're learning and we're doing that, you know, but it's, we're just on a horse. It's, you know, no different.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Very good. Well, is there anything else you want to share about what you do or why it's important, Steph?
I think my closing thoughts would be to think critically and to keep an open and creative mind. I think creativity, just to draw back in the art piece, is really what allows us to accommodate different styles and different modalities and differences in people. So I think just to keep a multiplicity of truth in mind.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I think sometimes we get stuck in this rut of in adaptive writing. And again, it's hard for me. I'm going to say it again. I have these two hats that's hard for me to like put one on and take one off, because I'm a therapist and I'm an instructor. So as an instructor, you know, we need to remember that what we're doing is it is therapeutic because they're getting the benefits of the horse and all of that is happening, right? But at the end of the day, instructors are not therapists, so we're not working on those things therapeutically. But that doesn't mean that we can't have that inclusive language, be more aware of our participants that have some of those differences. And even though you're not treating, right, air quotes, you're not treating those things, we can still be aware of them and create a culture of acceptance and that type of thing, which I think is where, you know, enter you and what you do and kind of at just educating like instructors or anybody about how to do that, right? Especially if you're not, you know, treating that therapeutically.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's a really positive, great thing to remind ourselves to slow down and to be mindful in present in the moment. And when we're working with people in the arena or in our community settings or in our offices, to ask questions and to recenter the people that we are working with.
Right. Absolutely. Well, if anybody wanted to get a hold of you and, you know, pick your brain or even enjoy some of your services, where can people find you? Either your social or whatever.
Oh, okay. So thank you for asking that. I don't have any like professional socials yet. Okay. Still emerging.
That's right.
But I do I have an email. Would you like
I can just put it in the show notes if that's okay.
Yeah, that would be great. Okay. I do work out of North Georgia primarily. I do travel, so there's that. And then there's always, you know, Zoom and phone calls. So you can find me anywhere.
Do you ever do like presentations or like, you know, little educational seminars? I could see that being really beneficial too, Steph.
Yeah, I do. I'm teaching a neurodiversity 101 workshop for an instructor and volunteer work week at Chastain Horse Park in the beginning of January on the 6th.
Awesome.
And there are hopes in the future to do residencies out west that are both art residencies and equine assisted service residencies.
Beautiful. I love that. Well, thank you, Steph. It's been absolutely enlightening. I really think that your perspective and kind of this whole movement that I think some folks probably didn't even know was happening, but is really, really important, especially for us that work directly in this field with the participants that it affects. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, and thank you for having me. It was a pleasure and it was fun preparing and being nervous to be on a podcast. So it was really fun. Thank you so much.
Good. I'm glad. You're podcast famous now. Before I let you go, I always ask my folks on the podcast the same question for season 3, and we're almost done with season 3. At the end of this year, we'll be starting season 4. Thanks. Yeah. I have to come up with the question for next year now. But this year's question was, what is your why? And why do you keep doing what you're doing with your kind of consulting business and your advocacy?
That's a really great question. I have given thought to it. The first thing that popped up was my daughter. She is the main reason why I do anything. But I also think when I think of why, there's like that aspect of hope, you know, hoping to create sustainable change, hoping to make an impact, and hoping for liberation for all beings. And this is just the route that I've been drawn to take.
I love that. In the grand scheme, in the grand battle of that acceptance and all of that, this is the path that you were placed on for a reason. So it's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yes. All right. Well, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for listening to another episode. Until the next one launches, stay connected to our community by joining the Not Just a Pony Ride Facebook group. There, we share exclusive educational content, answer your questions, and review new and exciting developments for the EAS community. Don't forget, if you have suggestions for future episode topics or a lead on a great guest that you think our audience would enjoy, click on the link in the show notes or visit us at hetrauniversity.org. This podcast is presented by Hetra University, an educational arm of the Heartland Equine Therapeutic Riding Academy. Hetra University's mission is to provide high-quality educational offerings to our participants and the EAS community. If you'd like to help us work toward our mission, you can make a donation by visiting us online at hetra.org. Again, I can't thank you all enough for helping Hetra change lives one stride at a time.